Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast of board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And this is episode 467, Best Digital Card Games. We'd like to thank all our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. Hey friends, we're back, and this week we are talking about the best digital card games. Anthony.
Yeah.
You've played some of these.
I've played all these. I love these games, man. It's crazy. No, there's actually a couple of... Well, there's one new one and then one like tangentially new one that I wanted to talk about this week. And then I was like, actually, we could just make a top 10. And here we go. There was actually more than this. There's so many good ones. So
it's true.
These are all games that are explicitly digital. So not like digital versions of the tabletop games you all know and love. There are a million of those that are really good, too. But these are all just like digital only, often for good reason. Lots of things to keep track of, lots of numbers.
Yeah. You kind of take it for granted. You're like, oh, yeah, that's right. I couldn't do this at a tabletop. There's no way to do those calculations, swap those cards, randomize those things. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. All that RNG is like, you cannot do this without the system in place.
Yeah. I think back in the day when we talked about, I guess we talked about video games, and we had video games, we had board games. Then we had board games that were on video consoles and Steam and apps and stuff like that. And generally, they were not good. You know, they were okay in some cases. They got better, of course. They got much better, of course. And then you got video games that became board games, and there's so many of these days. And we'll talk about a couple of more in a minute. But now it's interesting to see the concepts of analog tabletop gaming, especially in this case, card gaming, and those aspects and mechanics in video games. Not, like you said, not a transfer over, a re-implementation, like the actual conception and dynamics, and it's a video game format. And without having the tabletop or analog anytime, it's really interesting to see something like that built from the ground up with the analog stuff that we know and love, and to have video gamers be like, oh, this is excellent. I'm like, yes, we know.
I know. like one of these in particular, when it launched, I was like, oh, I know this. There's a million games like this. And listening to like video game podcasts and all those people be like, oh my gosh, this is the coolest thing. I've never even thought of this. And I'm like, yeah, no, it's crazy. Who would have thought you could build a deck and then play with that deck dynamically? It's crazy.
It is. And again, it's funny though, because in a video game, you could have these representations as real digital characters or other things. And they're like, no, let's put it in a card form. And you're like, something about a card. something about a car just feels right, even in a video game. So it's a lot of fun. And again, we're seeing more and more of this these days. We wanted to point out the best for you so that you hopefully you get a chance to pick them up and play them on whatever platform you're using these days, because these games are everywhere now.
True.
So that'll be our feature review. But before we get into the feature review, Anthony, we got another feature that is amazing and happens every time this time of year.
Yep. It is our annual, what do we call it? March Gamer Madness. Yes. I always have to remember. I'm like, what do we do to not make it a trademark issue?
That's right. Right. Legally distinct.
Gamer in the middle. Got it. March Gamer Madness. So we have a bracket of 64 games coming up. Starting next week, and every year we put up a contest where I put the bracket up about a week or so before the episode is aired, and you can go through the whole bracket and see how you do, compare it against the podcast when it goes live. So whoever gets closest to the final, and it takes us 2 weeks to record this, we do the first round of 64 the first week, and we do the rest the following week. Whoever comes closest wins a game. So we will... When this is up, you will be able to go and complete that. It'll be on the Facebook page as well as a link here in the show notes. It's fun. It doesn't take too long. And then you can yell at us that we're wrong because you chose something different. That's how these things work, right?
But they're fun. And they're fun. And they're fun because we do a different one every year, a different theme. And I think it's probably our most fun bunch of episodes. So if you have not listened to the other March Gamer Madness, please jump back. I mean, we probably have give or take 9-10 years of this. So this year, Anthony, we have a really cool one. I like this one a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like the smash up bracket.
Yeah.
Kind of what we're doing here. Yeah.
Well, it turns out that over time, and we've been at this for many years now at this point, that there is always a thing in tabletop gaming. Mm-hmm. And whatever that thing may be, it's how the whole industry kind of coalesces around something. So it used to be Vikings, but then it was also at one point zombies. And every once in a while, for some reason these days, it's cats. So we're looking at the March Gamer Madness of all madness, popular themes that are non-IP based. So none of your favorite sci-fis or any of those other things, but again, genre-based kind of stuff. And it's wacky, it's fun, it's smart, and these are games that you love. But in the end, there can be only one theme that rules them all, at least for 2023, 24,
yes,
give or take. Yes.
Yeah, until next year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And then there'll be somebody else who takes over. But, you know, right now, we got a lot of fun themes, a lot of games you know and love. So check it out, play it. Enjoy it. Enjoy the contest. Rage against the machine a little bit, and no basketballs required. So that's always a good part too.
Yeah. yeah, it'll be fun. I love this episode. It'll be fun for everybody.
All right, Anthony. So that's what's going on for the next 2 weeks. But there's something that's going on for quite some time with our, I guess, our fellow BGAs, our board game academics.
Yes. Yeah, the call for proposals is open. If you are an academic working in any field, because we are cross-disciplinary at Board Game Academics, we have a call for proposals open for the 2024 conference, which is taking place July 4th in Morristown, New Jersey, as well as the 2025 journal, which will launch next year in February. So if you have an idea, if you have a paper, if you have research that you're working on and you'd like to share it with the world, we would love to take a look at it. Abstracts 250 to 300 words. You don't have to be done with the research yet. Just have to be working on it and be able to present it this summer. Check out boardgameacademics.com/submissions for details. And the call for proposals will be open until April 7th. So check it out.
Absolutely. And for all my practitioners out there, maybe you're not in scholarly higher ed research, but maybe you're a teacher or a psychologist or an occupational therapist, or in many other fields and using tabletop gaming in some manner, we want to hear from you as well. So put together a small abstract. There's a lot of information that you can find about how that looks best. You can also obviously contact us. We'll direct you some proper resources, because practical applications is a big part of this. You know, we are open to everyone, every different profession, every walk of life, every nationality. We want your content here, and we want to be able to share it with everyone out there. So hit us up soon, because we'd love to see it. We should also mention, Anthony, we have some things happening for Board Gamers Anonymous, and I guess kind of crossover Board Game Academics. We mentioned this before. We will be at Long Island Tabletop. We'll be running two special sessions, one about leveling up your teach. Teaching board games is honestly the most important things about board games, because we're trying to get more people to play board games. But if you don't know how to teach board games, or you're not the best teacher at board games, this presentation with a panel of experts will really kind of help bring together all the best teaching methodologies so that you can get anyone to the table. Because I know we've all been in that situation where we had a game we love and it's just bouncing off against, you know, people at the table. It's just not working. They can't get it. They don't understand it. And again, there we have a lot of research. We have a lot of practitioners here. And I think that we could help you overcome that gap and get maybe family and friends who have not gamed before to the game table and love tabletop gaming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And then in addition to that, we'll also be talking about leveling up your mental health. Turns out tabletop gaming is excellent to help improve your mental health, your well-being, your connection to the community, helps you make friends, right? As adults, a little more difficult to make friends than when you were a kid. You know what? Grab a board game. Again, check out the teach so you can learn how to teach it even better with like people you've just met. And again, another way to connect with others that'll positively help your mental health and overall well-being. So that will be Long Island's largest tabletop gaming event. It's at the Cradle of Aviation. So if you ever want to see everything about aerospace, it's in one place in Garden City, New York, from April 6th to April 7th. This year, 2024, we were there last year. It was amazing. We're special guests this year. Please come out and join us. We'll see you there. All right, Anthony, that's everything that's happened with us. But we do also have our friends on Patreon, and you've been punching out some episodes. What do you got coming up this week?
Yeah, so I've recently finished up my trio of top 10 lists. So you can hear my rundown of my top 10 games, my top 10 video games, and my top 10 movies, courtesy of my son, who forced me to make those lists. This week I'm going to be talking about my top gaming experiences. So like specific memories, things that have happened in my life that just stick out and I remember very clearly. So many of them have been talked about on this podcast, but I will bring them together into kind of a one solid 30-minute lump for y'all. I look forward to recording it. So I hope y'all listen.
Excellent. If you'd like to check that out, patreon.com/BGA, where you get a ton of content, our Discord channel, and a lot of ways to connect and learn more about BGA. And again, thank you all for your support. All right, Anthony, let's get on to things that everyone wants to talk about. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right. So I mentioned that I had a couple of games that were like percolating in my brain that kind of led us to digital card games. One of them is not even like an official digital card game. It is a mini game within another game that just happens to be also a very good card game.
Okay. So, it's a game inside of a game?
It is. It is very much okay. A game inside of a game. So if you listen to my top 10 video games, you know that one of my favorite games of all time is Final Fantasy VII. It was my first PlayStation game. I played it end to end over a Christmas break when I was 15 years old. And I now am going through the new games, and the one that just came out, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, is kind of a remake, reimagining, remix of like the middle chunk of that game. And part of that, I'm not going to talk about that because that's a whole separate deep dive. but there is a mini game in this, in Rebirth, called Queen's Blood, that is a card game that is one of the best like in-game card games I think I've ever played. And Final Fantasy has had a few good ones. Triple Triad back in Final Fantasy VIII was fantastic. I was obsessed with that. I think I beat everybody on the map that you could to collect all the different character cards. And this is similar to that, but also very different. in that it has a lot of tactics to it, a lot of strategy, a lot of different places you can go. And I just reached a point in the game where you can, and this, I guess this is a spoiler if you're playing and haven't gotten there yet, so I don't know, skip 30 seconds ahead. But there's a place where you can go and you're no longer just playing an opponent. It's like single player puzzles. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. It reminded me of playing some of these legit full built card games that have all these single player puzzles you have to get through. I think I spent 2 or 3 hours last night just playing Queen's Blood in Final Fantasy VII instead of actually playing Final Fantasy VII. So the acquisition disorder part of this is not, obviously I played it and I love it. I would like a full game of just this. Because the rest of the game is great. I love Rebirth. And, you know, that's a separate review. But Queen's Blood by itself, I would love just to have a system that I could go sit and play it. Because you can't just play the game, right? If you beat all your opponents, you run out of people to play, you got to find some more. That's a separate part. You got to go off and do all the other stuff in the area so you can go to the next area and find more people to play. Give me a pure digital card game that's just Queen's Blood, right? They did that with the Witcher one, Gwent. I don't love Gwent, but they did it, and I had like a full Gwent game if I had loved Gwent. So this one is, I mean, just very briefly in terms of tactics, you have three columns that you're placing cards in, and every time you play with a card, it will tell you where you take control based on that placement. And then you're trying to, it's like a tug of war back and forth for control of these different locations. And as you level up and get more powerful cards, you can power up different locations, you can attack different locations, you can move things across the board. So it's this very tactical system, but also very strategic, where you have to kind of build a deck. You only get 15 cards in your deck, and you have to be able to manage the space based on what your opponent is doing. Be very reactive to what they're doing. It's a lot of fun. So, and you don't have to like Final Fantasy VII to like the game. I don't even know that there's a lot of references in there except some Chocobo stuff. So, Queen's Blood. I don't know. Again, not a review, because otherwise you'd have to go play it, right? But which requires you to buy this $70 game at a PS5. But Square or whoever, bring this out as a standalone game. I don't know that it would work analog, just because it's got a lot of that tracking stuff to keep to manage. But it might actually work analog, because it's not that many cards on the board at a time. Great stuff. So I'm having fun with that.
Excellent. Well, I got a couple of things I want to talk about, and I knew these days were coming. So first up, just in a very safe way, Star Trek Star Realms. It's a deck-building game set in space, of course, and featuring starships from Star Trek The Next Generation, Anthony.
Yeah.
If you haven't played Star Realms, it's a great little deck builder. And I guess if you want to call it this, and I could see it, one of the challenges with Star Realms is it's not a coherent universe that we know. So a lot of the cards benefit from other cards of its particular type. But if you're not too familiar with the blob ships, for example, then you might have a little bit more of a challenge. So bringing Star Trek, which especially with Next Gen, has very streamlined kind of collection of different ships, I think this is going to work pretty excellent, because Star Realms is excellent. Star Trek ships are also excellent and very easy and clean to read. So you're never going to confuse a Federation ship with a, you know, Ferengi ship or a Klingon ship or something like that. And again, even if you're not a Star Trek fan and what I just sounds made up, it still looks pretty understandable, right? So the Federation's usually gray and blue, give or take, you know, Klingons, and yeah, everyone has their own color. Let's just go along with that. So,
right, yeah.
So it's designed to be a two to four player game. It's about ships. It's about bases. It fits perfectly with the Star Trek theme. I'm surprised they didn't call it Star Trek Realms, but right now it's called Star Trek Star Realms. I get it, because you want to keep your IP in there, but also it's an extra word you do not need to have there. So I'm excited because I like Star Realms. And it's also a deck builder that's online that you can play, but from the analog version. And I think it's free, actually. I think you can play the base game for free on iOS, at least. Yep. So, Star Trek, Awesome. Love it. Great. Good job, people.
How did it take 12 years to do this?
I don't understand how it takes it.
Star Trek will put their IP on literally anything.
Oh, my God.
It's not quite a Star Wars bad, but it's very close.
That's true. It's true. There's a dice game that I shall not talk about, shall not be named. It is, yes. Now, we've been talking around, and I know Anthony's been talking more directly about CCGs. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever played a CCG or owned a CCG, you're like aware of the incredibly slippery slope of CCGs. It's so slippery, I can't even say it. And that's because once you start playing it and wanting to have a better deck, you have to buy more packs. And then eventually you have to buy secondary, you know, sets and individual cards and things. And then you're committed. And then there goes all your monies. And there's your whole, it's a lifelong game. So I have learned over time that no matter how tempting the CCG may be, I need to stay the heck away from it. But it turns out that UVS Games, Universe Games, has three CCGs coming out. One I don't care too much about, but maybe you do. Tekken. Tekken 8 is coming out. So
that's cool. Tekken's a good... That's actually a great IP for a CCG. I don't know if the fan base is big enough, but that's a cool idea.
It used to be such a big game. It was like with Mortal Kombat and with Street Fighter, and then it was Tekken. It was like the three. I was a Samurai Showdown fan myself, but
yeah, hipster.
The other, I know. The other three were out there. I was a Neo Geo guy, man. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
total hipster move. But that's good. They also have Godzilla.
Oh, and that's cool.
If you want to have a big kaiju battle, and again, a big CCG battle, again, getting dedicated decks for these monsters is amazing. The artwork is gorgeous. And they use a lot of block print art cards here. Just gorgeous. Foil. Oh, everything looks great.
Very cool.
And I'm excited about that. And it's dangerous. Now, I was like, okay, cool. Amazing artwork. Godzilla minus zero, minus color was amazing. So I'm getting pulled back in. Having this old-fashioned kind of artwork here, it's just beautiful. And I was like, all right, you kind of almost got me, but I think I'm going to... maybe I can get avoid it. And then, of course, they're going to have Star Trek Lower Decks, Anthony.
Oh, come on. So the other three, I'm like, those sound cool, but Lower Decks I might actually have to buy.
I know. Yeah. So there's going to be, again, if you're not familiar with Lower Decks, it is the animated comedy / nostalgia series, but it's really a lot more than that. It's very smart on its own. It's its own series. It's brilliant. It's enjoyable. Again, even if you're not a Star Trek fan, like if you're not a Star Trek fan, you're not going to get the inside jokes, but it's not one of those series that's just like, Inside joke until you just knock over. It really has strong characters, great artwork, a lot of fun. And yeah, they're doing a collectible card game. So why? Please, no. Don't do the thing. So yeah, I mean, it's a thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Like I always wondered about Universes because they have a lot of IPs already.
Yeah.
Right, like they have like Cowboy Bebop, I think. Mm-hmm. Trigun was one.
Yep.
Attack on Titan. Their big one is My Hero Academia.
Yes.
When they got that, and that's like a whole thing. And I have some of those cards, and they're great.
Yeah.
But this is like kind of going to another level. Like these are all anime, you know, like Yu Yu Hakusho.
Yeah.
Cool, but very niche.
You're very
getting
niche.
Star Trek, getting Godzilla.
Yeah. Like,
that's big,
especially now. I mean, Lower Decks Star Trek is huge right now. I think it's bigger than any of the current Star Treks running.
Right.
And Godzilla is as big as it's ever been with all the movies. There's so many movies. Some movies better than others, but there's a lot of movies on that. So there are several CCGs. There's not enough space to play them. There's way too many out there right now. The market is incredibly saturated. There's very few game stores left because of COVID and other reasons. Again, it's a whole episode. So I don't know even if I got into this, I would ever be able to play it. Because again, problems. But it might be one of those things that I just might have to collect because I have to collect the thing. So
I have certainly bought some CCGs of late just to have the cards. Like,
this is what I'm saying.
I will never play One Piece, but the cards are beautiful. So I've bought a few just because, like, these are fun to look at. I have the cards.
So we might need a dedicated recovery / prayer group just for CCG players because it's a thing. The companies are getting better. They're doing a great job. The artwork is top notch. The mechanics are better than ever before. Hopefully it won't be like a 90s bubble where they just overproduced all those different games and they went nowhere and they went dead. So yeah, a lot of CCGs coming out. Universe. Yeah, really excited. All right, so that's everything that we want to get to the table. Let's talk about the games we did get to the table. Anthony, our At the Table this week, we'll talk about what games you should run out and pick up because they're a buy. Or we'll let you know what games you should avoid because they're a dodge. Or if those games are the dreaded burn because, you know, Godzilla. So, you know, so buy it, play it, dodge it, burn it, whatever you need to do. Do one of those things. That's all we're saying. What did you play this week?
All right. So this is the second of the larger games that we all played together last weekend in New Jersey. It is Evacuation.
Oh.
So, yeah, I'll get some help from you this week on this one. Because
where are we evacuating to?
A different world, right? Oh. So what did we say? It was Arrakis to Pandora? Or no, Newfoundland. That's what I said. Newfoundland planet.
Okay. It changed multiple times. It can go anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. So the idea of this game from Vladimir Succi and Delicious Games is that you are on an old world that you have ravaged and destroyed because humans. And you found a new one that's bright and beautiful and colorful. And you're like, oh, cool. Let's move there. We'll take their stuff. And so you have to manage two economies. Yeah. And you have to basically wind down the economy in one world and ramp up the economy in the other world and do it in such a balanced way that you're able to maximize how much you accomplish in the new world. You're evacuating from one to the other, right? I don't recall in the rule book like what you are, if you're a corporation or a government or what. You're just a group of people getting off the planet. You control one of the continents, you are moving that continent somewhere else. At the beginning of the game, you have it's like 10 tiles, I think, on the old world. And these represent your production. You get 7 of every resource at the beginning of the round. And you need to spend a decent chunk of those at the start of the game to feed your people. As people move, you'll have to feed people on both planets. And the thing about the game that's interesting or frustrating, depending on who you ask, is the resources that you produce on either world are only you can only use them on those worlds. So at the start of the game, you have a huge pile of stuff on the old world. You can't build anything on the new world until you move things there. So if you make the decision not to purchase a ship in the first round that allows you to move things over, you are not going to produce anything, and you are in a bad place. So the game kind of requires you to maintain some level of balance. In terms of what you do to get there, there are a few different action options, right? So at the bottom of your player board, you have a bunch of different actions you can take. These include upgrading technologies. Everybody has their own unique 9 technology card tiles. There's 4 sets of them. So kind of like what Nucleum did, it has like asymmetrical tech trees. This has that. You have the ability to purchase new ships. The ships allow you to move things off of the old world to the new one. They each have a certain capacity in what they can carry. So you can move any of the tiles that are on your old world, and these represent population and factories. You can move stadiums, which is the dumbest named thing in the game, because they're not, they seem just to be like entertainment pieces, but they're also deeply related to the scoring mechanism. But if you have them on the old world, you can move them to the new world, basically. You have separate factory tiles that you can move that are not on the map, and once you move them, you will drop them off in the new world and then become available to then place onto the map, which is a separate action. So you need to get a bunch of stuff over, start building up your engine in the new world without killing the engine in the old world too soon, because then you can't feed your people over there or you run out of things to do. And basically kind of maintain this balance over the course of four rounds so that you shift gears about halfway through and are producing more on the other side. Now, we played the point variant, where you play through the full four rounds, and then you see who has the most points based on these three objective cards that you get at the beginning of the game. And the objectives are a bunch of different things. They're like, how many different... there's these in-round tiles that if you match the exact power level of the actions you took, you get some kind of bonus. That's one of the potential objectives, how many times you did that correctly. How far you are on this zigzaggy track that surrounds the planets. So they call it the progress track. So you're going to move along that. The progress track is very important for several reasons, because it determines where you can build on the new world, and also when you take some of the things off of the old world. So you want to balance that out a little bit. And just a bunch of stuff like that. So the thing about this game, and I'm leaving a few of the rules out because this isn't a rules teach, but the thing about this game is I enjoy it. I think it's a fun experience, but I do think it's kind of a pain in the butt to learn, and an even bigger pain in the butt to teach, right? And here's why. It's not that it's complicated in a way beyond other games. It's that everything you're doing is dependent and depending on other things that you're doing. It's one of those games where it's not, there's no flow to it necessarily. You have to take an action on the old world and able to enable actions on the new world. Once you take those actions on the new world, you need to be able to take actions on the old world to continue funneling resources into the new world, right? Things have to go back and forth. The actions you take cost energy. So you get two free actions per round, and then you have to pay energy for others. So you need to worry about your energy economy. You need to worry about your food economy only a little bit. Like, don't grow too much food, because you only need so much to feed your people. You need to worry about your steel economy so that you can build the stuff that you're placing on the new world. And then manage like the movement of resources back and forth, when you move your ships, all of this stuff matters. So like when I was teaching the game, the first time we played it, there was multiple times when people like interjected, like, okay, but what about this in relation to this? Which was a perfectly reasonable question, because it seemed like I forgot it. But it's just, you can't say everything in the order that it happens, because there is no order. It's like a circle, right? There's no like flow chart here. It's just the flow chart is a circle. So that's not a knock on the game necessarily. It's just a challenge if you're going to try to get it to the table. Like, you got to be able to overcome that and help people kind of overcome that as they play through it. There are some quirks here. Like I mentioned, like the stadiums don't make any sense. The race mode to the game, which is the base mode of the game, is kind of weird and awkward. We didn't really play that, but like reading through the rules, we're like, why would we want the game to end early? Like, that's what happens. Like, somebody sure. meets an objective, the game ends before the four rounds are up, and like, why would we want that to happen? There's like these little smiley faces that appear on the stadiums, as well as some of your technologies, that it seemingly only affect the player order, the turn order, but then also at the end of the game can have a huge impact on the score for some reason. It's weird stuff. Like, some of those things, I'm like, I don't get what this is doing thematically. It seems like a balance thing more than a theme thing, where so much of the game is thematic. So it's a play for me, a pretty solid play. I'm going to play it again. I'll probably play it solo and see how that plays. I like this a lot more than Woodcraft, which was the last Tsuchi game, which I didn't like very much at all. But it's still not to that level of like an Underwater Cities, which was such a, like a seamless intuitive experience. This is not intuitive, even though it seems like it should be. Take stuff off old world, put on new world, build up. There's just pieces of it that you're like, wait, why do I need to do that? Why is it like that? It just is. Okay. It just is. Got it. So there you have it, my thoughts on Evacuation. I rambled a bit there, Chris. What do you think?
I think you rambled a little bit because I think the game is it's incomplete in some areas. And I think, like you said, it's a challenging game to teach, because conceptually it's brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. The idea of, for whatever reason, the planet is dying, it's running out of resources. We need to move the population and industry from our home planet to this new planet that we've discovered. It's the concept is inspiring. It's innovative. It's it's such a great idea. And you look at the board itself, and it's brilliant, right? Mm-hmm. The two planets, the space travel way, which kind of wraps around both, kind of gives you that idea of, you know, slingshotting around. And it's just, it's so evocative, right? Like, wow, we got to get out of here. This planet's dying. We only have this number of rounds. We got to get these people in this industry out. We got to go across the spaceway. We got to land out there. We got to produce resources on this other side of our board. And it does it. And then it has certain elements to it. Again, both planet boards generally make sense. They, each one of them has a slight difference as far as like you got tokens on one and then the other side has little, I guess, little plastic pieces and little tiny, small kind of versions of the faculty. So it's not one in the same. And then you have this wonderful tech tree that you get to, you know, place out and then upgrade throughout. And it gives you special abilities that feel like they break the game. But again, everyone has those things. So it's kind of like Nukulum mm-hmm. in that situation where like, oh, this tech is good. And this one's good. This one's good. And you kind of build up a plan in your head about if I'm going to transport these people, what techs do I need and when do I need it? And I love that aspect. I also love the aspect where you're going to be playing cards to your player board to activate certain abilities. And the more that you activate the abilities, the more work that you've actually done, the further you travel. And also there's bonuses if you hit it just right. Those aspects, brilliant. Again, conceptually, brilliant. But then it kind of let me down a little bit. As you said, first off is the stadiums, right? This concept that you got to get three stadiums to the other side to score points. Again, you don't need them to win the game, but like it would be good if you did because of point scoring opportunities. I don't like, is three stadiums or X number of stadiums really the thing that the new planet needs? Why not certain monuments or capital buildings or research stations? Or nope, they're just a playing card that has a thing on it and has a happy face, or maybe it doesn't. And just like, so the whole idea of transporting these things on what is very coolly cool designed spaceships, it's just, it's lackluster. And then
it's so random. It doesn't make it honestly, like I said, it feels like a balance thing. They're like, okay, we need to make you do something else.
Sure.
So that it's not so easy to get everything off the planet. And most of you didn't. I think we all got negative points from the stadiums in the end, but it's so weird. It's such a weird thing.
It's again, like they have these cool spaceship designs that look more like fighter ships or cruisers. They don't really look like transport ships, but hey, to each his own. But then when you get the ships, what can you really send over but like a stadium and maybe a couple of resources? And you need to do that, but it's not dramatic, it's not fun, it doesn't feel like you're escaping, right? You're taking off with all that kind of stuff, right? And the board itself, the initial planet with the setup of the cardboard chits, is incredibly painfully flat and simplistic and just ugly to look at. Like you have this beautiful board, you have these beautifully designed spaceships, and then you have these ugly little cheap tokens on the board. Why weren't they literally anything else? Why didn't they have an interesting or colorful design to them? Why weren't they actually, Underworld Cities, you actually have little discs for the different cities. I mean, eventually you bring the discs over to put them on the other planet. Why aren't they discs? I mean, again, I know some of this is just game design that I'm not incredibly familiar with, but my user experience with the old planet was as boring as can be. Like, it was like, okay, you guys are there. I got to flip open these tokens. All right. Like, I didn't feel like the planet was dying or there was an imminent threat or I had to get things out or... And the odd graphic design on these tiles, I didn't feel like I was packing up a city or packing up a village or saving a country. Right. It didn't have anything to it. And then, like I said, you transport it over. It doesn't look like anything on the ship because you're not really able to move a city or a country. And then you put it on the other thing and you're like, and now they're dots. And you're like, all right, now they're dots under here. And I think I was playing as the blue color, which terrible blue things on a blue planet. I would not recommend.
I didn't think of that. That sucked.
Really bad. If you're colorblind or even like, I'm not colorblind, but even looking at the board, it was very easy to lose track of what I was putting out there on the board. So the game has a lot of additional modules you can add into it. And maybe those add a lot more to the games. I know you can flip the cards over and they give you a special ability and you can play that out. I know there's industry stuff that we played with that could give you extra bonus points. But again, the industry gives you bonus points if like your factories or your people are kind of lined up in some horizontal, vertical direction. I'm like, okay. Like again, it lost its thematic flavor. So overall, the game has tremendous promise to it. It just doesn't fully fulfill what that promise was promised, right? Like,
yeah,
it's going to be this thing. And again, this is Vladimir Succi, who created, in my opinion, one of the best games of all time with Last Will, which again was this upside down concept in which you needed to build up your wealth in order to spend your wealth and go bankrupt first so that you would win the game. So when I'm like, look, this man knows how to build up mechanics so that he could take one thing and blow it out to the other side and get it somewhere else. I'm like, this is going to rock. This is going to be great. The board looks great. The concept is great. The ships look great. He knows the mechanics. And I don't know. It just, it fell flat for me. I didn't think the teach is very hard. I don't think the game is complicated at all. There's always a thing you can do. But again, a lot of it was, you know, it was like, do you have enough food? Do you have four food? Do you have enough steel? Do you have enough of that? It was like, all right. So I think it's really missing that rocket boost. There's something dramatically missing for the game. Like it just falls short. And it's a really a kind of a sad thing. So, I mean, for me, I could see it giving it a very light play or a very light dodge. It's kind of like that for me. Like I would play this again, but I don't imagine there being anything else that's going to inspire me. Maybe there's a certain module connection where you put this one in and not this one in. And if you do this instead of that, but maybe it's a player count thing. Maybe if it's two players, it's faster. So therefore you can get in and out, but I don't know. I can't in good faith recommend it. And I love Vladimir Succi. So yeah, I don't know. It's a sad day for me.
Yeah. It's a tough one. I think I feel the same. I just like it a little bit more in the end, but at the end of the day, it's like, yeah, it's such a cool idea and it doesn't quite pull it off.
I mean, I think
like, give me like disasters or something. Give me something to force. Where's the urgency, right? Like why are we evacuating this whole world and how quickly do we need to do it? And it's just like, let's load up our board game collection on this ship and we'll ship it off into the stadium. Like what? What are we doing?
I mean, I think you're right, Anthony. I think a global deck of like either positive and or negative throughout the game or a timeline, you know, like where like, oh, here's the current news report. The volcanoes are exploding in this area. You must clear this area off first. Or, you know, turns out this area doesn't have enough steel. You have to send some steel, like make it more of a, I don't know, even make it a legacy game. Make it something that's like, actually something that's building a story, or make it a solo game and make it a pure puzzle, right? Make it an efficiency puzzle. Like how fast can you empty your home planet to the new planet? So like solo, legacy, I don't think these game modes work too much. And we were all relatively close on points, but it was frustrating for people. And again, there's nothing hard or difficult or challenging about the game. It's generally a good game. Like, it's got promise there. Maybe an expansion fixes it. I don't know.
Yeah, I could see that.
So, legacy expansion? Solo only kind of thing? I mean, I could see sitting down with
a solo. It's got a solo mode. I haven't played it yet.
I don't know. I think it might work better again, as far as that's concerned. So
I will let you know.
There you go.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. Well, after many, many years of myself, and I know you, Anthony, playing miniature games in what's called the Flight Path system. It's this system which Star Wars X-Wing Miniatures and Star Trek Attack Wing and Dungeons & Dragons Attack Wing, and I'm sure other wings that we do not collect or do not follow. I got an opportunity to play the OG. Wings of Glory. This is where all of that stuff comes from. And this is a game from Ares Games. And I know, Anthony, you and I have walked past and through and talked to all the great people at Ares Games. And we have oftentimes seen their massive tables full of World War One, World War Two, and every once in a while aliens, but also ships, right? Every once in a while there's ships, right? I think when we played War of the Ring, the card game, they also had the ship battles, you know, on the sides of us as well. The ships and the planes are gorgeous, and they are period accurate, down to having like the little pilots and gunners in the actual planes themselves. The ships, I have not played that, although now I do want to play that. But I've always wondered about this flight path system because it was such a big part of miniature gaming, and I wanted to get, again, to the OG. So I had an opportunity to play the World War One rules and accessory pack version. And I know some about World War One. The people we were playing with were hardcore history people, so it was really great to play with them. Joe and other people out there knew about specifically the planes, the era that they kind of operated in, all the different countries they came from. And primarily what it is two teams, two players, and you're having these aerial battles over these wonderful playmats. And in some cases, it's just king of the hill, whoever's left standing wins. In some cases, one of the teams has to meet a certain objective, like bombing a certain bridge, and the other team has to stop them. There is little biplanes, and there are giant biplanes. There's also zeppelins as well, again, depending on the accessory pack that you play with. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to have a particular plane. They're going to have a specific damage deck that they kind of, you know, that they work with, again, based on what kind of hits they give out. And then you're going to have a deck of movement cards. Now, these movement cards are interesting because basically it's straight up little tiny card and it has the arrow where that plane's going to move. So what you're going to be able to do, Anthony, in this case, instead of having all that, you know, plexiglass and all those kind of rulers, you're actually going to put the card, properly position it with the airplane, and then based on that card, you're going to reposition that plane. So plane, card in front of it, put the plane back where the card tells it to go. So you don't have to like go, well, I want to make a two turn or a three turn, or I just need to look at the cards in my hand. I have all the cards available to me. So it's never like I'm without a certain turn. Now, there is some rules, again, based upon, you know, if you're doing a high stress maneuver, you take another one, you could take a damage from doing that. And again, there's a lot of complicated rules as far as that's concerned. But in the base version, of course, you move, and then you hopefully line up with an enemy plane, and then you take the ruler, and in this case, they had a nice, you know, propeller ruler, and then you see if you hit the other plane based upon the shooting cone of that particular plane. And then the opponent, again, based on what kind of hits you do, flips one of the cards from the damage deck. This is a hidden damage deck. They'll take hits. So it could be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And again, if you play the more complicated version, more challenging version, there's also smoke and fire. There's a complete knockout. But basically, your ship has a certain number of hit points, and so does the other opponent. And as you draw cards, eventually you get to the hit point limit of your plane and it kind of blows up. So you're flying, you're ducking, you're dodging, you're circling around, you're shooting the other planes. Again, a very streamlined, simplistic version of the, and sometimes overly complicated, X-Wing miniatures attack wing. It's just a bunch of planes. You fly out, you shoot at each other, you get lucky or unlucky with the deck. You can get a bunch of zeros and be fine. You can hit a five and kind of blow up. And overall, it was a lot of fun. It's definitely on the lighter, more accessible side. If you've ever wanted to play one of these kind of miniature games, but you were always kind of intimidated by all the stuff that goes along with it, I would recommend this because it's as simple as it gets. The planes are well detailed and it's pretty straightforward. Everything that you need is, you know, one card information for the plane, the particular damage decks, and it has a lot of variety as far as planes are concerned. These are really colorful and dynamic from all the different countries. And again, generally a lot of fun. So I'm going to say it's a play. I think it's a good game. Check it out. That's Wings of Glory World War One rules and accessory pack.
Cool. That's interesting.
Yeah. I hope to play World War II. I think from what I've been told, World War II is a little better, a little more dynamic, but it was fun to see those little prop planes.
Yeah.
All right, everyone, let's get on to our feature review. Our feature review this week, of course, is not on the tabletop. It's on the tablet or any number of devices you might have. We're talking about the best digital card games, the top 10, so to speak. Anthony, again, we can't say enough about these video games because they typically play when we don't have time to get the tabletop games to the table, or they play while we're waiting for the people to put the tabletop games on the table, and hopefully they're never played while we're playing tabletop games at the table.
Right. Yeah. Don't be playing one of these games on your phone while you should be paying attention to the people.
So this episode has a warning out there for everybody, so be careful.
Yeah, it's addictive. Don't do it.
All right. So starting off with our number 10.
All right. Yeah. Number 10 on this list is an interesting game that came out. Oh, my gosh. When did this game come out? 3 years ago? 2 years ago? Called Wild Frost. So it's Wild Frost. It is a deck building game. In which you run through, take multiple runs. So it's very familiar to some of these other games. But it's icy and cold because that's one of the things that these games do to make them different is they change the theme.
Nice.
And it's decently difficult, right? Like this game is definitely the deck building is important, but the piloting is equally important, if not more so. Some of these games, if you get the right cards in your deck and you manage the cards in the deck effectively, then the piloting is a little less important. Like, you just play what comes into your hand. Here, it really matters the order in which you play and how you bring them out. But the game is actually relatively short at the same time, right? So you can beat it with 4 or 5 successful runs through the game, like 10 to 15 hours-ish, which I find compelling because a lot of these games are essentially endless, right? We'll get to some of these, but dozens, hundreds, even thousands of hours can go into some of these games, and maybe you beat them, maybe it's not possible to beat them, maybe they just keep growing. But this one, similar to some others, is a pure deck builder with a kind of a fun theme that's relatively difficult despite that, kind of cutesy and colorful. And it's just very engaging. You can play it on PC or on the Switch. Most of these for me are on the Switch because I have a Mac if I'm playing them. And it's a good one. So, Wild Frost.
Nice. Our number nine is Hearthstone. Hearthstone was based on one of my favorite games of all time, Warcraft. RTS, man. Back in the day when RTSs were cool and a thing. I mean, they will be again one day, but back in the day, Warcraft was a big thing. And when Hearthstone was announced back in 2014, I was excited because I really liked all the characters, the stories that went along with it. And it's basically a two-player game where you have a hero character that you're playing as that gives you a special ability. And you have a deck of 30 cards that you construct. And those cards are a number of different things. Typically, they are characters that utilize and activate different special abilities. They can taunt you. They could fire magic missiles at you. They can destroy other deck cards. They have a whole bunch, endless number of things. I mean, it's been around for almost 10 years at this point, right? 2014. So it's a deep and rich game with a lot of expansions that came out for it. It has a lot of different play modules, so you could play cooperatively versus an AI. It has some campaign modes that you can go through. It's just overall a very fun lore, world-building aspect of so many other games. Obviously, World of Warcraft plays into that as well. I had a lot of fun building decks, playing decks. I never invested money into the game particularly. I didn't buy any of the particular microtransactions, which meant that I had to grind a lot more to get the better cards because they were just, there's a lot of decks, like there's some genius players out there and they know like certain synergies work really well together. I've always enjoyed creating my own synergies or themes to put together. And when it comes out and it works out pretty well, it's a lot of fun. So Hearthstone's been a great game. I stopped playing it for a while, have not come back to it yet, but there was a time where there was nothing but Hearthstone for a good amount of time.
Yeah, we played this one at Gen Con against each other back in the day.
I tell you.
All right, next up on the list is number 8. This is Marvel's Midnight Suns. This is at first glance, an XCOM-style game. It's from Firaxis, who made XCOM. But they made it a card-driven tactics game. So as you build out your teams, you also are building a deck. And then it's turn-based, and you will play these cards to determine which actions your characters will play. You are, of course, playing as Marvel's Midnight Suns, which is kind of this super niche group of heroes that kind of band together to fight the more supernatural elements of the Marvel Universe. So in this game, they're going up against Lilith, if you're familiar with the comics at all, kind of the big bad demon lady. So you get a team of 3 to 4 heroes and you get a deck of cards and you're going to pull the cards based on what you pull in your hand, based on how you build that deck, you're going to be able to take different actions with different heroes on the map. So it's a tactics game, but the cards determine what you can and cannot do tactically. Such a great game, and it really kind of fell flat when it came out. It was like it came out right at the beginning of, I feel like, Marvel fatigue really setting in, like a year and a half ago. And that combined with like the kind of esoteric gameplay elements here where people are like, oh, it's not just a Marvel game where I punch things. Like, no, it's a card game. Like, oh, okay. it definitely kind of turns some people off. And I think it came out like the week after Marvel Snap launched too. So people are like, oh, like Snap. Like, no, not like Snap.
Oh, no.
like XCOM with cards. But it is fantastic. And it's generally very cheap. You can get like, because Firaxis makes their games very cheap once they've been out for a while. You can find this game for like 10, 20 bucks. Highly recommended. Marvel's Midnight Suns.
Very nice. Well, that leads us to our number 7, Age of Rivals. I think this is a game I came a little bit late to. I know, Anthony, you've played this a bunch beforehand. And this is a 2-player civilization game where you have an opponent. And over 3 rounds, you're deck building. And as you purchase cards from a market, they switch. And then you get to purchase the other available cards that your opponent did not pick. And those cards go to a tableau. Those cards do a number of different things. They give you resources. They give you protection with the castles. They give you military. They score you victory points. And as you're building up your tableau, your cards are typically doing whatever their special ability is at that time or in combination with other cards that build up in your particular tableau. The round comes to an end. There's a military round where you score your military points, and then you have to take damage from your opponent's military. You do that three more times, and then the final round, you utilize all the cards that you had pre-purchased and build your final tableau. And again, you do military again, you score victory points throughout, and then you have a winner. It's basically a two-player competitive civilization game, and it plays in less than 10 minutes. There's hundreds of cards, and as you play up, you'll unlock special characters. There's AI modes you can play against. You can play online. This is something that's you can play on Steam or you can play on your phone. And each of the unique characters that you unlock have a certain set of cards that are generally built from them so that you can select a couple of special cards that you know will be available in the market to you, especially like they'll pop up like, hey, this is the card that you had pre-selected, one of three cards. Do you want to purchase it? You don't have to, but your opponent will not get an opportunity to do so. This has to be, out of all my online games that I play, and I play a lot of online games on my phone, this is the one I probably play the most. It is super quick. It's civilization building, which I love, and it's just generally a lot of fun. It's a great little deck builder. That's Age of Rivals.
Fantastic little game. All right. Next up at number six, we have Loop Hero.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Loop Hero, at first glance, does not look like a card game. You are, like, if you look at a screenshot, there's like this like 16-bit-ish looking map, and your hero kind of moving around on it. But the way it works is it's procedurally generated, and your hero, the Loop Hero, you are not that hero. You are outside of that. You're trying to help them out. Right, you're trying to help them get more powerful and be able to take on more powerful challenges. So you have these different locations in your hand that are effectively cards. Like they'll just be like lining the bottom of the screen. And you place these out along the path of your hero, and they'll be able to stop there and, you know, find food and level up and get new weapons and face off against different bosses that then helps them power up and get new loot. So it's all about like the order in which you place these things on this loop. And then watching your hero kind of just loop and loop and loop and get more powerful and accomplish these goals based on how you've effectively programmed it out with the hand of cards that you have. So it's tactical to a degree, but it's generally quite strategic in how you want to use what's been given to you. And once you get into it, it is legit just like a classic deck building experience, but with like a fun twist to it. So if you can get them to the most powerful level, help them beat the lick or lich, you will have defeated the game. But it's one of those games because it is randomly generated and because the decks allow you to kind of build up the different locations, highly replayable as well. So that is Loop Hero.
Excellent. All right. Before we get to our number five, I just want to mention Age of Rivals. I didn't mention it's free. So that's also a good thing about it, too.
Right, all right. That is good to know, yeah.
Yeah, it's great. Number five is Monster Train, which is not free, unfortunately. Monster Train is a roguelike deck-building game in which you're on a train to hell, and hell has frozen over. Not to worry. Yeah. you're one of the many inhabitants, creatures of hell. And it is your job to take this train and protect the pyre as it's traveling through hell. And you have three different vertical battlegrounds in which you get to set up your different minions to stop the forces of heaven from destroying your pyre. So you have your particular hero character, in this case, or villain character, however you want to talk about it. And that villain character comes along with some special abilities. And as the game goes on, you'll make stops at certain locations that will give you additional abilities, additional cards. and additional opportunities to upgrade your special hero character. Your hero character has a lot of abilities, but can also get knocked out and destroyed. So you get to, throughout the game, you'll have an opportunity to spend your points to put more minions on the board. Some are more defensive, some are spellcasters, some are, you know, just big, powerful, you know, going to hit you in the face kind of units. They're all different and fun. There's some demon stuff. There's some plant stuff. There's some ocean stuff. There's even candle stuff for some reason. So it's really creative, really colorful, cartoony fun. And then at the end of that particular stage, you have to fight the big angel good guy. And it, that angel good guy goes through each of your levels, and you have a shot to take them out with all of your spells and abilities. This is a game that was kind of surprising. I was like, oh, I've played deck builders before, and usually, you know, you play them digitally, and the thing does a thing, and you're like, oh, so it shot a thing for 1 point. The combinations with the different minions and the spell abilities and how you can upgrade the cards, and you can also, you know, streamline your deck, is just so smart and innovative and so much fun. And the idea of the train moving through, it's just great. It's very dynamic. I really a big fan. That's Monster Train.
Yes, wonderful game. Number four is a creepy, weird one, but kind of a brilliant little game called Inscription. This came out 2.5 years ago, back in 2021, from Daniel Mullins, and it is described as a deck-building RPG. So it is a deck-building game, but there's also a lot more going on here. So the conceit of the game is you are locked in this room with this weird stranger who wears these different masks, and you have to face off against him with this card game, right? And so there's a scale that you're trying to fill up with teeth, because creepy, as you win your matches. Now, the overall theme and aesthetic here is kind of spooky, creepy, dark. It's not like scary, but it's not like, you know, butterflies and gumballs either. So if you're not a big fan of like horror themed games, this is definitely not for you. But if you like that kind of theme, or if you just don't care, the mechanics within the deck builder itself are quite good. Each card has multiple different elements to it in terms of like how you play them and the abilities that they have and how they interact with each other. And the artwork's very interesting and evocative. And as you go through this, it's not just like encountering new bosses or unlocking new cards. There's a lot going on here. And I don't want to say any more than that because I feel like that would spoil the experience. But going through this, again, like I mentioned before, some of these games is like you play hundreds of hours and you just try to get the min-max the best possible run through this particular game. It's like it's effectively like playing solitaire, but like really, really cool, fun, advanced, pretty solitaire. This is not that. It's an RPG. So there's a story going on here. There's some elements to it. There's more to this game. And it was really, really popular. I mean, if you follow video games at all, I'm sure you heard of this. If you don't, it was very popular when it came out for all these reasons. Such a creative, interesting, multimodal experience within the game space. But as a deck builder on its own, even if you just play like the first few hours of it to get the card experience, it is fantastic. So that is Inscription.
Excellent. Our number three is a game that kind of blew up, and we played it right off the bat. We did a whole episode on it. That's Marvel Snap.
Snap.
So I've already talked about Hearthstone and how it's such an incredible game, great system. Ben Brode, who was integral, who was one of the creative forces behind Hearthstone, left one day and was part of the amazing creative team to create Marvel Snap. So the Marvel part, obviously, is the Marvel Universe. And I mean the Marvel Universe. It utilizes characters that even me, as a Marvel fan, are like, huh? Who? When? Okay, I guess, yeah. I guess I remember hearing something about that character in the background at some point. So basically, again, just like Hearthstone, this is a two-player game, and your job is to knock out the other player. And basically how you do that is you want to have the most power in two out of three locations on the board. You do that by constructing a deck of 12 cards, And, you know, you consult the meta information in order to, like, what cards work better with which. And typically in Marvel Snap, there's just, again, because it's 12 cards, there are just, like, very much defined deck build types. So some cards destroy, like Venom and Carnage or Galactus. Some cards discard, like MODOK. And then, of course, some cards bring it back, like Hela. And some cards move. So you might have a move deck with, you know, the Phoenix or Odin. I guess not really Odin so much, but Heimdall. Heimdall will move you across. He's the other Asgardian. So there's particular deck types. And Marvel Snap is very good at bringing new characters in almost all the time, almost too much of the time. And
too much.
Definitely, like, buffing and nerfing some of their cards as they get playback. So I think it's relatively balanced. It is free to play, but it has tremendous number of microtransactions if you want to go down that path. And primarily what they do to kind of really get you in is they really brought on so many great artists, and obviously some of the great artists of all time, like Jim Lee. Some of the cards, like, there's base cards, standard cards, and then there's variant cards, different artistic covers, and you can upgrade the cards with different colors. But thankfully, it's all cosmetic. So you could change the art, that's cosmetic. And as you go through the game, basically what you're getting is these boosters and this energy to basically upgrade the cards to different levels of art. And sometimes you can also purchase cards based upon your gameplay. But typically, microtransactions to buy new cards that make your deck better. And just like most games, typically the new cards that come out are a little bit OP and then eventually get nerfed and kind of played into the game. So Marvel Snap, super quick, super fun. I am still playing it, even after all this time, and enjoying it a great deal.
Marvel Snap, yeah, it's fantastic. The only reason I don't play it as much as I used to is because I couldn't keep up with the meta. It was too much for me.
It's a lot of meta.
Yeah. I do go back to it occasionally, though. I'm just like, this is fun. Let's play it for 20 minutes. Yeah. Like, this is fun.
And the animations and the sounds that go along with the character cards is great. It's like you said, it is a lot of new meta all the time. So
a lot.
Like, remember when that worked? It doesn't work anymore. It does this now. You're like, oh, yeah. All right.
It reminds me of trying to keep up with Magic the Gathering, oh, yeah. Which I did that for all of like 18 months when I was in high school into college. I was like, nope, can't do this. It's too expensive and too hard to pay attention. But it's fun. It's fun. I still like the game.
And I like the fact that they actually made a game with good mechanics, right? This could have been...
Yes. Yes.
This could have been junk, like a junk game. And every once in a while, not always, the cards are actually thematic. Every once in a while.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to talk about one of the oldest IPs of all.
Whoa.
Poker.
Okay.
Specifically in a game called Bellatro, which, again, if you're following video games, you've probably heard of this. But this is a brand new one. It came out about 3.5 weeks ago. And it's on everything. I have it on 2 or 3 devices already. And it is a poker-themed roguelike deck builder. And it's pretty much, that describes it pretty well, right? So you have 8 antes, which are like levels, and each ante has 3 hands, or 3 blinds, that you have to beat. The small, the big, and the boss. And to do that, you have to hit a certain threshold. Right. So like when you start the game, the small blind is 300 chips. You have to get 300 chips with your hand. To do that, you have to play some poker hand, any poker hand, from high card all the way up to royal flush. And each of those hands is worth a certain amount, a base amount. And so how that works is, like, let's say it's a pair. A pair is worth 10 times 2. Right. But you can level that up by getting different celestial cards, power cards. Each of the cards you play into the hand is also worth points. So if you have a pair of twos, that adds 2 plus 2, 4 to the 10. So now it's 14 times 2. But if you play 2 tens, it adds 20. So now it's 40 times 2. So the relative hands, based on their height, you know, their weight in poker, are worth more. You also have astral cards that, like, let you change the cards in your deck, add different abilities to them, let you draw new things, change things, add multipliers. So you have like the base level, like the amount of chips that you get for the hand you play, but you also get a multiplier, which is really important. So you can get the chips up to 1 million, but if it's still just times 2, it's 2 million. But if you get it up to like, you're never going to get to 1 million, by the way. But if you add in a multiplier of like 40 or 50 or 100 or 200, then you start getting these crazy high scores, and that's how you're going to beat the round. Because by the time you get to the eighth ante, the eighth round, you need scores up close to 100,000. Like, this is how you've leveled up your deck. So the biggest thing here, the big asymmetry that comes out of this game, is that you have these Joker cards. You can have 5 Joker cards in the game, and each of these Joker cards does something different, right? So they, maybe you get extra chips for every club you play. Maybe you get to power up every card that you effectively play. Maybe, and this is my favorite one, every card you play counts towards your hand, even if it's not part of the hand, right? So let's say you play one pair, a pair of aces, you could throw 3 kings, or a king, a queen, and a jack in there as well, which would normally not be worth anything, but now that's an extra 30 points into your hand. So at how you build those, which jokers you recruit, because between every single hand, and there's 24 hands in the game if you get through all of it, between every single hand you can buy new stuff, you get money for the success of your hand. So it's just constantly developing, constantly changing. It's one of the most satisfying loops I've had in a game like this ever, because it's relatively quick. If you're going to do poorly, you know very quickly that you're going to do poorly. Like, you've gotten bad draws on the Jokers, or you made a bad decision at some point. There's packs that you purchase as well. So you get like a random selection of like 4 cards. You pick one to add to your deck. So you could get bad draws. You know that. You start over, right? There's different decks you can unlock that you could start the game with that are asymmetrical. There's just so much interesting stuff going on here that I feel like in another game would have been things that you added over time, right? But there's like 6 or 7 different ways to customize your experience here. It's so asymmetrical and so developing and so emergent in gameplay. I guess I can say I don't think you need to like poker to play this game. I don't know. I like poker. So from my perspective, I'm like, it helps, but the mechanics of the game by itself, like, you'd have to learn the poker hands, but other than that, everything else is really just like learning what all these different things do. Great game. Balatro, highly recommend it. If you haven't played it yet, it's on literally everything except for phones at this point, which they have planned that will be out in the future. So you can find it on all the stuff, Mac as well, which is crazy because nothing's on Mac. check it out.
Excellent. All right, and our number one game is a game that kind of brings together the best elements of a lot of the games that we've been talking about here, in particular, rogue-like deck-building games. So many of us understand deck-building games, right? It's all about taking cards from a market, building up a hand, whether it's building towards a certain meta, or playing some cards out, tableau, getting some new cards, wash, rinse, repeat. And then roguelike. So again, once upon a time, there was text-based adventure video games. And Rogue was one of those that was a, you know, RPG-inspired dungeon crawl game. And it's where you had these procedural generated levels, turn-based combat, but you actually had game debts. You could actually lose the game. Think about Dungeons & Dragons, as far as like these different elements that pop up and you have to address them, and they pop up and you upgrade your characters and such. Well, I would say, and Anthony would say in this case, that the roguelike deck building game of all is the one where you ascend the spire. And of course, Anthony, our number one game is Slay the Spire. And Slay the Spire is great for so many reasons, but in particular, it offers gameplay that really draws you into this really weird, unique world in which you are one of these 4 characters, and each of these 4 characters plays very different. They have a very different special ability play style. It's still attack and defense, but maybe you get the robot guy, and he's got all these spears that are flying around, and they're kind of bouncing off each other and gaining special abilities and attacking at the end of the round. Maybe you're sneaking around and like a rogue, stabbing, backstabbing, and poisoning throughout. Maybe you're like the big knight hero and you're just throwing down damage with your sword. Again, there's just a lot of different aspects to the particular characters. And then each of the levels that you face, because you follow this math and you get to pick your winding path, is going to be met with all these different odd characters, these little cartoony, monstrous characters. And each of those have their own particular special abilities and ways in which it's best to defeat them. As the game goes on, you build up your deck because you're going to go to the market. You're going to thin your deck out in some cases. And every once in a while, you're going to run across a really wacky little side adventure in which you could take damage or gain special abilities, or it adds to your story. And this story is a big mystery, because as you fight your way through facing all these characters, you're going to pick up a whole bunch of different, you know, pieces of the story's elements and fight bigger and bigger bosses until you finally fight the biggest, baddest boss ever. I don't know if I want to spoil anything here, Anthony, but you're going to, you know, fight a big epic battle after fighting all these other epic battles. And then it doesn't necessarily solve anything. But weirdly enough, it seems like you've been here before. And honestly, you do want to be there again and again and again and again. It has a lot of customizations, a lot of fun ways to play. You can make it harder for yourself. There's a lot of daily runs and different challenges. And again, the artwork is fun and unique, almost looks like, I don't know, cel-shaded marionettes as they kind of bounce around on the screen. It's generally a great game, such a great game. It's actually getting a board game version. Anthony, that is Slay the Spire. You're a big fan, right?
I am a huge fan of Slay the Spire. I love this game. I'm not very good at it, which I always found odd, because it's not like I'm amazing at all deck builders, but this one in particular always kind of kicked my butt, which has made me play it a lot, because I'm like, sure, I gotta beat this stupid thing. But yeah, I've put probably 100 hours into this thing over different systems that I own it on. I own it in three different places. Wow. Slay the Spire, it feels like Minesweeper or, you know, Solitaire, something you just have on a device. You open it up, you're like, I got 20 minutes, I'm just gonna poke around here, you know. I'll play this in the background while I'm supposed to be on a meeting. Like, whatever I'm doing. Yeah, it's fantastic.
All right, everyone. So there you go. The top 10 best digital card games. We hope that you enjoy this list. We hope you take advantage of this list, because a lot of these games are free to play. You don't necessarily have to pay the microtransactions. And again, because these are digital, they tend to go down in price, but stay high in quality. So definitely check these out as or in between the many other tabletop games that you're getting to the table. So until next time, this is Chris.
And this is Anthony.
And we'll save you all a seat at the table. Take care, everyone.
Bye.